Hey, Teddy, welcome to the Comedy Confession Booth.
What's up?
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I apologize. I was late and a mess, and I'm just happy that you're here.
Yeah. It's apology. Not accept. No, it's fine. I don't care. It's all good.
Well, welcome to the booth. I appreciate that you wore a green shirt for the green screen.
Oh, yeah. That was smart.
Yeah. So I was actually going to do the same thing, and then I thought about it, but you wouldn't know. You've never been in this room.
I just want my body to be surrounded by the essence of the clubhouse visually.
Yeah, I think
you should. That's sort of what I'm going for.
I think you should just be like a floating head.
That would be it. Honestly, goals.
Hashtag goals.
Yep.
Just like run around the city of Barcelona as a head.
I knew someone called Floating Head in school, but that was for a different reason.
Did it have to do with blowjobs?
What's a blowjob?
Oh, it's basically when you hold a broom and then you blow on it.
Oh, so my gran did a lot of blowjobs.
Yeah, your gran did a lot of blowjobs.
Well, that's good to know.
Many men. Many brooms. Sorry.
Many brooms.
Many brooms. Many brooms. Yeah, so basically, I just want to, let's just jump right into it.
Let's do it.
I want to get to know you as a comedian. You're here for a few days.
Yeah.
You're headlining the Spotlight show on March 9th.
Factually, that is accurate.
Factually, but non-factually.
I mean,
subjectively.
In spirit, I'm not headlining it. In spirit, I'm sort of floating.
You are a spirit. You're a floating spirit.
I am a floating spirit. I am a Miyazaki film, in essence.
I appreciate that.
I don't know why I've started with this weird energy.
I know. You have, like, normal energy, and then we jump in here, and I have weird energy, and...
I've got to perform, darling.
I am always on. I must be a version of myself. Anyway, I have weird energy today, but tell me about you. Tell me about your comedy career and what led you to do stand-up comedy.
I did stand-up comedy because I paid money for a guy to see him perform comedy.
I didn't
purchase a human.
You just have like a man like shackled in your bedroom.
I just have a guy. I got a guy, don't worry about it. It's not a kink thing. It's a work. No, that's worse. No,
it's poor capitalism.
Yeah. It's a butler. It's a butler. No, I paid for a comedy gig and I thought the guy was shit. I'm not going to name names. And I thought I could do better, like many men. And then tried it and sucked for ages. And but once anyone that gets it, like once you're addicted, you're addicted. That's the only thing I care about at all. And yeah, I kind of realized that everyone that I ever looked up to was, even if not a stand up per se, they were all like funny.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I want to be more like that. Like anyone that I cared about was like funny. I could get real psychological about it, that I interpret humor as being a sign of intelligence because, and in my family, there's a deep importance to prove your intelligence. But that's maybe too personal.
If you don't want to get into that, we don't have to. But I'm very interested in that kind of perspective of how did you come to that sort of conclusion? Because I would agree. It's sort of like my brother and I. We always say that like people who like country music are stupid.
No, but I disagree. I don't think it's a correct assessment, right? I don't actually think people that are funny are inherently smart. But like, I think...
But people who aren't funny are inherently stupid.
I mean, I don't know how hilarious Stephen Hawking is. You know what I mean? Like,
That's fair.
Was he tell... No, don't... That's too early for the Epstein Island jokes.
We came right out with a blowjob. There are many directions we can go in.
So my gran was hanging out with Stephen Hawking on Epstein's. No, Jesus.
Pro crowd work.
Connections. No, I don't know what I was saying, but sorry.
Oh yeah, humor is intelligence. Like, what makes you think that?
I've kind of come to the counter conclusion that I'd actually disagree with that, but I think that's what like the base like psychological need for it was like a validation of that I'm smart because I sucked at school, but I come from a very academic family, and that was my way of kind of proving that I'm intelligent, was being witty.
Yeah.
But as I've grown older and wiser, I kind of think it's that part of it's a bit nonsense. I don't believe in it. I think it's kind of harmful even.
Interesting. That's fascinating to me, because I mean you could go back to Shakespeare, who says that like wit is a sign of intelligence. And I think it's a kind of intelligence,
but it's like it's a very maybe it's like a jaded thing that the longer you do stand up, the more you realize how artificial a lot of it is. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like you can learn the tips and tricks of you can learn how to be witty. Like, how many people do you see do crowd work that are really good at crowd work but aren't like good at conversation?
Yeah.
Like, or aren't authentic about mm-hmm. it. So I stopped having faith in it as like a sign of intelligence. Cause I think you can learn it as a skill. I don't think people that are good at comedy are preternaturally gifted or intelligent. I think they're just people that stuck with it and cared about it and worked hard and maybe have a bit more of a sense than most for laughing at situations.
Yeah.
Like sad or dark or whatever.
Sure, yeah. Sure. So that it's like they have a sense of humor.
Yeah. Yeah. Ideally, comedians, this is my hot take. I think comedians should have a sense of humor. Broadly speaking, I think that's a good thing to have. I think if you don't, you know, then
you're in the wrong industry.
Yeah. Then, I don't know, become an artist.
Yeah, just start painting shit.
Yeah. It's not hard. Anyone can paint.
Anyone can paint. 5-year-olds do it. It's just skills.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you've seen a Jackson Pollock, but I mean, I've had men paint better pictures on
Jackson Pollock?
Me.
They've had men paint better pictures on you. How many different colors were they using?
I'm in such a weird mood.
Is this how you react to a weird mood, as jokes about men coming on your face as a painting?
Yes.
I inferred the face. You didn't say face.
No, but that's definitely what I meant.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, you could sell my face for a lot of money.
I mean, it depends on the market, you know?
It depends.
On if we're in a recession economy or not.
That's fair. I mean, look, it's for sale. If someone out there wants it.
All right. Anyone?
Hold up a black light.
Any buyers? Got any spare cash?
This is what happens. But yeah, no, I mean, it is an interesting idea to think about, like, our community, like, just being, well, is intelligence inherent, right? That's the other side of the coin that you're talking about.
Is intelligence valuable? Like, if fundamentally as a thing, is being intelligent like a good trait? I don't necessarily think so. Like, yeah. I don't think it's a bad trait, I think it's like, it's more a descriptor than a value. Does
sure.
that make sense? It's a very pretentious way. I've recently decided to stop pretending that I'm not pretentious about this stuff. So I'm trying to just be open about it.
It's very like Bo Burnham of you.
Yeah.
To just be like, I am pretentious, but I'm saying that I'm not, which makes me a little less pretentious.
Exactly. If you're self-aware about it, it's okay. No, I don't know. I think like we kind of think that intelligence is fundamentally a good thing, but also how many dickheads are intelligent, right?
Oh, yeah.
And how many like nice, kind people are super dumb?
Oh, yeah.
They're better. I'd rather be one of the nice, dumb ones than one of the intelligent assholes.
I love that perspective.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have an issue with an intelligence complex as well in my family. So I can relate to what you're saying.
Oh, yeah? How academics are your family? Let's compete.
Oh, my God. So my family itself isn't like super, like my grandparents are really into like culture. And so they still take classes today and they go to see Broadway shows all the time. They mm-hmm. go to like workshops, they take classes at like the local colleges and libraries.
I have to say, it's kind of funny to me that in America, Broadway is like high academic culture. It's like, yeah, we saw Rent and Cats. They were kind of cultured. My mom took me to see Wagner operas when I was 8.
Oh my God, stop.
Yeah.
Operas are so boring.
Do you know what? They're like kind of,
I went to see La Boheme because, as you know, Rent is based on La Boheme. So I was like, if there's going to be an opera I'll like, it's La Boheme.
Yeah.
And I felt, I saw the connections happening, but I was like, this is Rent, but 5 hours long and boring.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings on opera where it's very, like, over the top. There's just some people making out outside. Cool.
They did that purposely because we were looking at that.
You say we. You were just gazing out.
Yeah.
Jamie's had a lonely time lately. It's okay.
It's true. Someone make out with me.
No, I don't know. I think, like, opera, it's like all shit. Like, I think most of it is meh, but when it's amazing, it's stellar. Like, just because, like, it is objectively the most, like, impressive live show, I think.
You think?
It, purely in terms of, like, A, the singers are, it's, like, objectively the hardest kind of singing. Mm-hmm. Like, requires the most training kind of stuff. I mean, I'm not a singing expert, but I don't know. I feel that that's about right. And, like, when you go to ones that have, like, huge production value, like, it's kind of similar with musicals, to be fair, where, like, where I've seen musicals where I didn't enjoy the music or the story, but I was like, this was great fun.
Yeah.
Like, just, like, seeing big production, big dancing. Like, I remember I once saw an opera in God, I sound so wanky. My parents are teachers. I don't have that much money. I feel like I sound like I'm really loaded.
No, it just it sounds like your parents.
Latin
are.
And ancient Greek.
Oh God.
Yeah.
That is like, academic is all fuck.
That's kind of what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, yeah, my whole family is incredibly into the whole traditional academia thing. Like, I always said, like, posh taste without posh money. It's kind of how I describe a lot of my family. Not that we were poor, I don't like to pretend that, but we were, you know, very middle of the road.
Yeah.
And like, but I saw an opera in Vienna once that the thing that was amazing was the cast was like five people essentially. But there's one scene where there's two guys are getting picked up to go to war. Mm-hmm. Two of the five main characters. And just for this one scene alone, they hired about 80 actors that played the army. And they built a giant boat that comes in, and there's 80. And it was just like so unnecessarily decadent to hire another 80 cast members for one scene that don't speak.
That is wild.
And like shit like that, I'm like, that's why opera's fun, because it's deeply over the top, decadent, like, decadent's maybe not the best word. It's deeply like commitment to the bit. Like, it's about grandeur. It's about, like, huge and drama and everything so over the top. And when it's good, it's great. Like,
yeah.
But I'm not, like, Mr. Opera. Like,
no.
I just, my parents were really into it. So I saw perhaps more than most teens do. But, like, I haven't been in the last couple of years. Like,
yeah, because you were only a teen, like, a couple of years ago.
Of course. I'm 21.
You look great for your age.
Thank you so much.
I like that commitment to the bit, though. So let's kind of like circle back to comedy. How do you think that sort of upbringing informed your comedy today?
Ooh, I think for a long time it made me so desperate to do comedy that was what I perceived as like cultured and intelligent. I've since moved away from that idea because I think it's low-key classist, where it's like, oh, it has to be, like, I used to think if a joke is about, I don't know, Nietzsche or whatever, that makes it a smart joke, which is just not true. It's right. Like, it's a smart joke can be about, like, it can be a smart joke about bukkake, right? Like, it doesn't need, it being about a traditionally perceived intelligent topic does not make it intelligent.
Sure, especially if I would say the audience can't relate or understand the joke, then it's not smart because you're not.
And it's just like trying to like show off and like, you know, metaphorically masturbate on stage.
Sure.
So I kind of tried to move away from that. And now, I mean, look, in a year, I'll probably completely have changed my mind again. But now my whole like mental thing is about making it about being authentic. But what does that even mean?
Yeah, what does that mean?
To me, I'm like trying to make stuff that is at least true to me in that moment.
Sure.
So I'm trying to like, so I've stopped writing set lists.
Okay.
I don't, for any gig really. The only gigs I do set lists for is open mics that I want to try out new stuff when I have like, I want to get through A, B, C, and D. Whereas now I just kind of try and start the set, feel the moment. Maybe I know the first joke just so I know where I'm vaguely going.
Right.
And then just feel what feels like correct in that moment to me.
Right.
Instead of being like tied to the idea of I've got to get from A to B to C to D.
That's actually really interesting. I hate using the word interesting. It's such a boring word.
That's okay. But
it's just the easiest like first reaction. But I think that's a really cool way to do comedy. And I think a lot of that probably would come from hosting too, because I know you host a lot. And
yeah.
I would say the more I host, the less I write set lists, because when you're hosting, it's very much about being in the moment, interacting mm-hmm. with the audience, saying, okay, we need to get the energy from here to here. And it's interesting that you've taken that into your comedy. How do you think that's changed like your style on stage?
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
I mean, like a lot of things have changed for me over the last like year or so of my life. Like there's been a lot of things that have influenced how I do comedy. Like shit, like I went, stopped drinking alcohol and I saw quite a few things. I had like 1 week where I saw four different things that really inspired me. And it really, like, changed how I approach
things. What were those things?
I can give you the long version or the short version.
Let's go with short version first. And short then if version. I want more, we'll get it.
I gig with Viktor Patashkan, who I'm sure you are very aware of, who is, if you're not aware of, is an amazing touring comedian who's probably in your village right now, knowing him.
He must have, like, a time turner. Like, he's everywhere.
I have no idea how he does it. But so he was the first one. He... And like from him, I feel when you work with him, you really understand how much he appreciates the audience and appreciates the fact that they are there. He never takes it for granted. Oh, I'm trying to do this. This is meant to be the short version. Jesus Christ.
That's okay.
And then no, the second thing was I saw two New York comedians who had this thing where each joke worked within a vacuum, where like each joke within could be delivered on its own, was 30 seconds to 90 seconds. And each joke was killer. And it was like, oh, that's that New York like writing thing of just everything's fucking tight. You didn't need any context or anything for that joke to work, which was awesome. Yeah. Then I saw Jacqueline Novak Get on Your Knees on Netflix, which if you have seen...
I still need to watch it.
It is spectacularly good. Talk about uncompromisingly intelligent. Like it's basically a poem for 90 minutes. It's unreal. And I did a workshop on clowning. Done by Elf Lyons.
Oh yeah.
Who, and I mean, if you ever get if you are remotely interested in comedy and Elf Lyons is ever doing a workshop near you, fucking run. Game changing. She's like has just such an amazing. I don't know. I don't want to suck her dick too much, but
no, suck it. We love sucking dicks.
Yeah. But yeah. So I had those four things, and then that kind of all changed how I. Approached comedy, and it made me care a lot more about like being present and not trying to like make it artificial, but make it a genuine love for being there and for the audience and for situation. And also if I'm in a bad mood, acknowledging that as opposed to faking it.
Yeah.
And like rolling with that energy as opposed like yeah, it's just different, but I feel like so much looser and more comfortable on stage now.
That's great, and I bet the audience can kind of sense that as well. Where
I think so.
Yeah, I've noticed. I kind of been going down a similar sort of thing where like when I feel like I'm in a bad mood, I try and just one time was like, oh, I feel like shit, and then some guy was like, well, you look great, and I was like, oh, cool, I have the opinion of one man, like I'm so validated. Like it actually opens up so many more opportunities for authentic and funny interactions, I think.
Absolutely. Like I recently had a gig where I'd had a kebab during the day.
Who does that?
No, I know. It was a dangerous game. And I just kind of talked about it with the audience. I was like, I'm feeling weird. I had a day kebab. Everything's wrong. This whole day is fucked. And it I wouldn't say I killed, but like I did fine. And it was authentic.
Yeah. And it was also like only in that moment. Like that's
exactly.
That's what I love about live comedy is like it can't be replicated. Like that moment happened.
It's what sets comedy apart from any other live performance, yeah, pretty much, is that it's uniquely can occur on that night, which is why, like, I mean, this is kind of going down a different rabbit hole, but why I have such, like, difficulty with the whole insta-realification of comedy is just that it so reduces it to what works online, as opposed to understanding that the live experience, like the best crowd workers I've ever seen, it would never work on TikTok, mm-hmm, because it's so reliant on the context of the whole night.
Yeah.
Because it's so present, and you need to know that Sandra, she earlier was a bit weird about a specific thing with dogs. That's Josh. He has a dog. That's Drake. Aubrey Graham, the rapper. And that's... he's a friend of Josh.
Yeah. Drake and Josh.
Yeah.
Did that make it over to Switzerland?
No, but that's one of those American things where I know the name of it. I couldn't tell you a single thing about it, but like I have it as a frame of reference.
It's like crazily in the news right now because Drake Bell...
Which one of them was accused of sexual assault?
It's the opposite. Oh. Drake Bell, like he was the anonymous minor in a sexual assault case. Oh. Again, like that... he brought to court, like, against, I think it was maybe against Dan Schneider, or like,
I don't know who that is.
He's like the Nickelodeon guy that, okay, like created all the Nickelodeon teen shows that we all like, Drake and Josh.
Telling
and
me that guy's a weirdo. Like,
yeah, right. The guy that was obsessed with making shows for teens.
I don't think
teens.
I trust any adult that makes content for children.
It's weird.
There's something about it I just don't trust.
And I agree. Mm. Have you seen that that Jim Carrey show, Just Kidding?
No.
Oh, he plays like a Mr. Rogers character. Mm. It's like, it was very like niche, like it was on Showtime, so no one watched it, but it was really good and sad, and also like drew on this, like, why is this adult man like making shows for kids?
Yeah.
And like, I think you'd enjoy it, honestly.
I think I would. I like the old Jim Carrey.
Oh, yeah.
Like him as an old man.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's very... interesting.
I agree.
Fucking crazy, like off his rocker, and talk about pretentious, like but like when he's doing his little paintings about like the political state of the world, where it's like, oh, what if Trump was like ugly? it's great.
What if Trump was ugly? He is.
Nice fit. Look, say what you want about DJT, he is a sexy man.
Get it.
Drain my swamp.
Oh my god, I was just gonna say, no, I'm not gonna say it. Grab it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like we've heard it. What were we saying?
You were saying that you don't think he's hot, but he has good political opinions. I think that was what you were at.
Yeah, I'm really pro Trump.
Yep,
I just want to get that out there, in the universe.
Would you say he's the top Trump?
I would say he's the top. I would say he trumps all.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd say he could put a hotel inside of me and.
Oh, you can check it anytime, but you could never leave.
Yeah. As long as he pays taxes. Before the Trump stuff, right.
I was probably rambling on about something pretentious.
Yeah, you were, but it was great. I enjoyed it. And now I have ADD and I'm distracted. But I wanted to ask you. So, like, we're talking about your comedy. We've lost the train of thought now. So what kind of, like, jokes are you telling on stage now? Like, what are you excited about?
Oh, like, knock, knock.
Who's there?
I didn't have a follow-up. I should have had a follow-up.
Ready.
What kind of jokes am I telling? I don't know. I'm trying to... I'm talking a lot about, you know, therapy shit, but also just kind of stuff that I find interesting. I'm trying to force myself to not just do stuff that is a punchline, but is instead like, this is a topic.
Mm.
But that's kind of trickier. But I think it's a fun challenge.
Yeah.
But also, like, with my ADHD, like, day to day, I completely change what I want, like, my entire comedy brands to be. Like,
at
any point, I'm like, no, I just want to be Mr. Silly Goofball. And then I want to be like, I want to be the political guy. And deeply don't want that. But I don't know, for a while I thought it was original to talk about therapy, not so much. But I try to be authentic, right? That's right. So that's my whole word that I'm trying to live by, is authenticity.
I just had this, like, I think that's a really great word to live by, and at the same time was like, it's very like Instagram influencer to just be like, I'm authentic, like hashtag authentic.
Well, this is the thing. If we're going to get real pretentious about it, then the performance of authenticity is itself a performance and therefore inauthentic.
Right.
So it's like a deeply a cycle that you can never win. But I don't know. I'm trying to write and perform stuff that, I put it this way, I have a lot of material I don't care about or don't think is important. I'm trying to only do the stuff that I care about.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I like that you talk about therapy on stage. I talk about therapy. Therapy is important.
That's great.
Do you go to therapy?
Twice a week, baby.
Nice. Yeah. Wow, that's a good... I go once every 2 weeks, and I think I need to up the dose.
Yeah, you need that double dose.
Double dose.
You need to get double teamed. No, by your psych. No, I go twice a week. I was in a mental health institution in 2022. I consider myself an expert on practically nothing in life except receiving therapy, because I've been in and out of it since I was 16. So I like,
oh yeah,
know a fair bit.
Yeah. You know a fair bit. What would be like your takeaway, or what's your, I don't know, like obviously
turn
go
that
to therapy.
Frown.
Turn that upside frown down. Upside down. What's like the most useful thing you've taken from therapy?
Oh geez, fuck if I know. Oh, that's way too big a question.
I know, that's a very big question.
There's a million things I could say, but I think the one that comes to mind right now in this moment is finding a balance of what is objectively true around you and about you, and what is perceived emotion. And that's a very, very tricky thing, because it's like, I think especially in something like comedy or any performing art, really, I think most people veer between extreme self-hate and extreme arrogance. Mm-hmm. And finding the middle ground of like knowing objectively where you kind of stand quality-wise, but also like seeing that and not either being too self-critical or too self-aggrandizing.
Because
you know when you kill, like you're like, oh, I'm the fucking shit.
Yeah.
And then you bomb and then you're like, oh, I'm worthless. And neither is true.
Yeah.
Like, but we're all somewhere in between. Oh, hello. Someone's taking a photo. That's fun.
Okay, hello. Yeah, I like to open it up because otherwise it like feels really dark in here. But yeah, I think that's a really good takeaway from therapy. I was just looking for some free therapy right now.
Okay. Well, what's your issues? No. Let's get into it.
Oh my God. My issues. Oh God.
How's your relationship with your mother?
Actually, it's decent. She called me the other day.
I think I met your mom
like
a year or two ago. Is
it's
that possible?
Yeah, she visits a lot. She's short.
That wasn't like a roast joke.
I met your mom.
What a casual
in
way.
In her bedroom.
No, she came to a couple of shows when I was visiting here once. Yeah.
Probably, yeah. She's visited a few times. I think like 3 or 4 times now. Mm. No, she's good. She called me the other day, though, and I literally was like working, but I was also procrastinating work. Mm. And I was like, I can't talk. And she was like, are you going to call me soon? And I was like, yeah, but like not for a while, because I just like can't. Like, I don't know if you've had that feeling where you know you need to talk to people you love, but you're also just like, I can't talk to anyone. Like, I just need to like withdraw.
All the time. I mean, I really struggle with like maintaining textual relationships sometimes, or like long distance conversational relationships, just because it's like I just get very overwhelmed very quickly, and it all kind of lives like replying to messages lives in the same place as doing emails and in my head, and then it just becomes a stress thing to do rather than a fun thing to do.
Yeah,
like I wish I had a different app than Instagram and WhatsApp for like personal. Do you know?
Yeah.
Because I have like my Instagram and my WhatsApp, by nature of how comedy works, is also my work messaging platform. So I have no risk. So if I receive 3 messages on WhatsApp, 1 might be personal and 2 might be like business.
Right.
And then I have to do the business ones, and the personal one becomes business. And it's an annoying cycle, but I get you there.
Yeah, it is annoying. And it's, I always try and direct people to my email, like if they're like trying to get a spot on a show. I'm like, can you just email me? Because I can't like have it in my I don't like having the notifications. Are you like that too? Or you like to like mark things red?
Yeah, always.
Yeah. And so then you forget stuff and then you don't, I don't know. It's a whole cycle. But yeah, no, it's, what was I going to say? I got to change this over actually.
That's okay.
Because I have the free version. So about a half hour into every episode, I explain to every different comic how I have the free version.
You need to have like a bit around it or like at least the theme song or something.
Yeah.
It's the free version. Sorry.
Free version of Otter.
There we go.
Sponsored by Otter.
Otters. No, they're good. They cuddle when they sleep.
Yeah. They are cute. Mm. Do you know Otter? It's a AI like transcription software.
Nah.
Super useful.
Okay.
For shit like this, but with the free version, you can't upload a file. You have to like record live and you only have a half hour. So you have to like,
okay, what the fuck, Otter, sponsor the show already. This
sponsor
is like such
us.
A shout out. Yeah.
Come on, Otter. I mean, it is taking my job also cause it's AI, but it's also helping my job.
Yeah.
So whatever. Mm. Let's talk more about you though.
Okay.
I know. I was like, comedy confession booth. I'll talk about my problems. Just kidding. Let's talk about yours.
Sure. I'm an open book. Broadly.
Yeah. What are your problems? No. I mean, unless you want to. But that's kind of too vague of a question.
It's too vague. Yeah.
It's too vague.
Be specific.
That's too vague. Mm-hmm. No. So how long have you been doing comedy? No.
I think 7 years.
Cool.
I think now since my first ever mic.
Your first ever mic. And how, like your first ever mic... You said you were like kind of shit for a while and then you kind of got into a rhythm.
Yeah. I mean, I have a theory that everyone that when they start is either way over prepared or way under prepared. And so either like, and I was way under prepared.
Sure.
And some, also everyone at the beginning either needs humbling or needs, the confirmation.
Right.
I needed humbling because I was just cocky about it. I was very, conventional dude who's funny with his friends. We've all seen that open micer.
Oh, God. I can't believe that was you.
No, deeply it was. Like, I cared, but I didn't care enough to put in the work. And that was another big, like, therapy thing was, like, realizing if I actually put work into stuff, it makes a difference and things don't just come naturally.
So frustrating how that's true.
So annoying.
It's like
annoying.
It's like I have to work.
You ever realize that if you like put in labor, it sometimes has fruits?
Right.
Like it's so annoying.
You know what though that is really annoying about it? Sorry to sidebar.
No, go for it.
And this is one of my frustrations of late is when you put in work and you still don't get fruits. And I think that's the most frustrating thing about putting work in is that it's not 100% reliable.
Yeah, especially when it's work that's I mentally differentiate a lot between work where the fruits bring me joy or the fruits are just the avoidance of being poisoned.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? That it's like, is something a net positive or is just avoiding a negative? If something's just avoiding a negative, like doing your taxes or whatever,
right?
Then it's the go-to example, but there's a million others. Then it's like, it doesn't feel good to have it done. It's just, you've saved yourself stress later.
Sure.
Like, so I really, really struggle with those things that are just like, it's, you don't see how it's positively affecting you. You're never going to, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my point's made.
Yeah, like nothing good comes out of doing your taxes.
No, don't do them. No, don't do them. Trust.
We're sending all 20 listeners. There's about 20 now.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, let's give them a shout out name by name.
I'll go look it up right now.
Do you have that address?
We'll send like thank you cards.
Yeah, we'll have a little party.
If you're listening and you want a thank you card, DM me. I'll send you one.
I will send you a personalized love haiku.
Wait, that's amazing.
I'll do it.
Please. Okay. DM Teddy for a personalized love haiku.
Yeah,
We're adding to your
But
plate.
Do not follow me.
No new followers.
I'm trying to lose followers. I'm trying to go against the grain. You know?
I love that. I will say, wait, I know we're getting sidebarred, you did mention before, this is when we got sidebarred the first time, about reels and, like, how it's kind of ruining comedy. And now you're like going against the grain. I'm, you know, anti-followers. What is your opinion on so, like, how are you using social media to?
I'm doing it. I'm trying to figure out a way that I can do it that I enjoy my own potential content. But I fucking hate the word content right off the bat. Like, I just don't. It's very sort of, how do we make something? It's very inorganic, and it's very.
Made you some content.
Yeah. Like, it's very dishonest in a way. I mean, but also at the same time, it's not that I have anything against comedians that do it. Like, I get why, and it absolutely on a business level makes sense, and it's smart. It's genuinely smart, and it requires work, and it becomes a part of the job. And like, if you are a realist about stand-up comedy in 2024, you have to also have some kind of online presence. And I'm just on an ongoing journey trying to figure out what an online presence is for me that I don't feel is soul-killing, but also is good. Because it's just deeply frustrating, because you'll post like a reel of a joke that you know is fucking good, and you know in the room it killed, and it's high quality filmed, and it's done well and whatever, and you've done all the things right, and it's just completely arbitrary. And then you'll post a random fucking clip that's just completely an off the cuff stupid moment that's not particularly good, and that will do way better. And you just, there's no rhyme or reason to it. There's people that have figured out how to play the game, but also you're then such a,
but then you're just playing the game.
But also, like, you know, fair enough, you know. Like, I really can't criticize it, because it's very much coming from a place of, I haven't gone viral. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I do.
It's much easier to sit here and be like, yeah, they're actually not the real artists. The real artists are the ones whose clips get 30 likes. like, those are the really good comedians.
Yeah, we're the ones that, like, actually are...
yeah. But there's loads of those people that do it really well. Like again, coming back to Viktor Patrashkan, like, he does... Yeah. His clips do really, really well, but he's also really, really good live.
Right.
You know? And he's figured out a way that the clips convey what the live shows are like.
Yes.
So it makes people want to come to live shows. And he puts in a lot of work into it. Like, you know, he video edits every day for like 2-3 hours. Do you know what I mean? Which, you know, I maybe don't focus on that. But and then I can't like criticize that remotely, because that's like a really, but it wouldn't be me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's hard, because if the brand you're going for, and what you enjoy about doing comedy is being authentic and being in the moment and enjoying that kind of sort of the live energy of the room. Mm. It's really hard to marry that with this modern day sort of industry necessity to...
How do we make it work that it gets the best click?
Yeah.
Like how are we talking about clicks per minute ratio? Like...
Well, and then I see there are comedians who I've seen like come and like do their whole camera setup and then just do mediocre crowd work just to get clips. And like,
it's deeply, that's the depressing thing, is when it then translates into people writing for online instead of for the live experience, and people like, you know, people that have done, with no disrespect to these people, I understand why they're doing it. And probably if I was starting now, I'd probably be doing the same, if I'm honest.
Agree.
Like, there are 10 gigs deep and are bringing along a DSLR camera to film their show on a tripod. And it's just like, just learn the chords before you start that, you know? But also, if it does well for them and does well for their careers and it brings more people into comedy shows that maybe wouldn't otherwise come, that's not a bad thing. Like, I feel very kind of back and forth about it constantly. And again, maybe my opinion would be wildly different if I had any online success at all.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, though. And I just find, like, social media personally is so toxic in a way, because I've started posting clips and then it's like you can't help but feel validated when something does well online.
Of course you do. It feels great,
right? But then the flip side is it feels so shitty when it doesn't, and
there's no maths to it. There's no like, this is my bit that does the best live, therefore it will do the best on...
Even like I've had people like comment on like a bit that doesn't do well online where they're like, this isn't getting the attention it deserves. And I'm like, yeah, but like, I don't know.
Then give it it.
I don't know what you want from me. Like, anyway.
It's also just such an oversaturated space now. Like, it's also everyone's doing the same fucking thing. So kind of, I'm trying, my thing is to try and figure out, and I don't have the solution. I would never claim to.
How do you not have the answers?
All right, I'm not Sway. is that a Tunisia reference?
I have no idea who that is.
Oh, it was like from a Kanye interview where it's like, you don't have the answer, Sway.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I would never listen to a Kanye interview.
I mean, okay, this was before certain statements.
This is before he...
This is when he was just the like sexist and crazy, before he was anti-Semitic sexist and crazy.
I was okay with the sexism.
Yeah. It was like funny. It was like, I put the pussy in a sarcophagus. Like, oh, have you ever had sex with a pharaoh? Put the pussy in a sarcophagus. Like, that's great. It's super funny.
Pretty good.
But no, I don't know. Like, it's but I'm just trying to find the thing that the form of online thing that I enjoy. Like, I've currently been doing like a weekly series that, like, it's never gonna go viral by its nature because each clip is fucking 4 minutes long.
Cool.
But it's like me throwing three new joke ideas that I'm going to try an open mic and people and like testing them like while I'm just sat in a stool at home.
Cool.
And I call it like making the sausage because you know how the sausage gets made. And like it's very important to me that these bits are genuinely stuff I have written that week.
Yeah.
Because I've had like other comedians be like, just like integrate material and it will like do better. And I'm like, that's completely defeats the honesty of it and the point of it. And like, sure, that would probably look like I'm smarter.
Right.
But there have to also be duds in there. And like, I never know which one of the three will, but it also forces me to write three new premises that I'm not embarrassed to post on Instagram.
Right.
Every week.
Which is great.
Which is great. And but like, it's never going to do amazingly online, but the people that have liked it, have engaged with it and have like, so they think it's cool, and if you know, if you're willing to spend 3.5 minutes watching me try out material, then that's nice.
I would love to spend 3.5 minutes watching you try out material.
Well, Jamie, you're gonna make me blush.
Wait. So, what's your writing process?
Oh fuck knows. Like again, ADHD. It's like fucking every way and no way. I have 17 different notebooks, 4 different. Note apps. Sometimes it's something that comes up in conversation. Sometimes I sit down and have a topic and try to address it. And sometimes I just riff something on. Yeah, as soon as I think I have a formula, the formula stops working.
Sure.
Because then I'm like bored of the formula.
I totally
and then I completely
get it.
Have to like fuck it all up and be like, no, I'm gonna write this joke backwards, but. My big thing is, and every comedian says this, but write down every idea.
Yeah.
No matter how bad or good or how big an idea or how small an idea. So I have like a list of notes. I have a notes list that's just concepts for a full hour.
Cool.
And it's just, they're not good.
Do like, you have a favorite one?
There's quite a few that I might not share because I may do it at some point.
Love it.
But one that I will share because it was bad. The idea was just the whole show is done in pilot voice as if you're piloting the crowd and the crowd is the people in the plane and it's like a narrative of what's happening in the plane. Which is fun conceptually.
I think that's never... really funny.
It's like funny for 2 minutes. And then as soon as you get to like the third minute of and we're coming to the next joke. That's as soon as you get to that point, it's like, okay, like we are fucking done. Like, what is this? But yeah, shit like that. It's just like a bananas idea. And who knows? I might do that as a 5-minute set.
Yeah, that would be a fun character sort of alternative set.
Yeah, I'd love to do more alt shit. That's one thing. That's one thing I really like in Barcelona. You guys have a genuine alt scene, which is cool.
Kind of. We're working on it.
Yeah, I mean, you have more than the rest of Europe.
Cool.
I mean, I would say maybe Amsterdam, but like,
sure.
Other than that, like Berlin, no one's all Berlin. Everyone's just like,
well, they're German, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't expect German people to be that interesting, you know.
Well, it's cute that kidding. You think that there are Germans in Berlin, but I think there's three at this point. God damn it! No, I don't mean that for the record. But no, like the most scenes, because they're still quite young. To have an alt scene, you need to have a successful main scene.
Yeah,
and then you need it to be an offshoot. And here, there's like two or three shows that are like relatively regular alt, like yeah. The stuff that Andy does.
Andy I would Casper. Say Andy Casper is like the king of alt in Barcelona.
Yeah, and you got Ewan May as well, who does loads of fucking weird shit.
Yeah, he does weird shit. But yeah, me and Andy do Nonsense Pudding, which you're doing on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I got a really stupid idea.
Oh, good. I'm really excited for it. Guys, come to Nonsense Pudding. Yeah, Nonsense Pudding's really fun. Yeah, Andy does Sadness Cabaret. He does this, we have like a little clown club sort of deal.
Oh, awesome.
Where we do little workshops and stuff. So that's fun.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So that's kind of what he's building out of. But there's a lot of like clown in Barcelona and kind of, but it's mainly been sort of tied to the improv scene. Mm-hmm. And Andy is working really hard to bring it more to the stand up scene or just have that sensibility in stand up. And I think clown. Like some of the best, we were talking last night about like Zach Zucker and you mentioned Elf Lyons. Like I think people who have that sort of clown sensibility are some of the best performers, whether doing stand-up or clown or character or anything else.
Oh yeah. I mean, if you gave me a budget that was like a big amount of money to go, but I have to spend it on improving my comedy in whatever way that may be, it wouldn't be touring or stand-up or anything. It would be, like, clown school.
Cool.
100%.
Yeah.
Because, like, everyone I know that's gone, even though some of them would be like, yeah, it was a shit time,
yeah.
They've come back and they've had a... I mean, talk about, like, being present. Like, they've had a level of, like, in-the-momentness that I think a lot of stand-ups don't reach. And also, it's such a... Something I really admire in clowning is, like, how much it like deconstructs your ego. Like how much like all the best clowns that I've met, they've really, they're not trying, and this is a problem that so many stand-ups have, they're not trying to be cool or attractive. Like doesn't like, they're not trying to be impressive.
Right.
They're trying, what is the objectively funniest thing? Even if I look like a complete fool or asshole or straight up bad human being.
Yeah.
I don't need to be liked. I need to be funny. And like, there's a lot of value to that, that a lot of stand-ups who are very in it for the ego boost, which on some level we all are. It's quite hard to not want to appear cool or appear fun or attractive or likable. Like,
right.
And I think that's something that I could use getting over.
Yeah, you're too fun and likable and attractive.
I'm just too hot and nice and...
I will say, every time you come to Barcelona, you seem to get some action, so you're,
I don't know.
You're too cool.
Yeah, I suppose I am too cool.
You're too cool.
Yeah.
What keeps but you... What were you
going to
say?
Go on, nothing.
I was just going to... Because we're getting up on time... I was just going to ask you what keeps you coming back to Barcelona. Like, what is it? You like our alt scene? Like, what do you like about our scene?
Loads of things.
Compliment us.
Sure, gladly. I was just thinking about this today, actually. Since it's International Women's Day, more women than most other scenes, which is, like, awesome. Like, it just also behind the scenes. In some other scenes, you have a fair amount of female performers, but you don't have as many people, women, behind the scenes making it happen. Mm-hmm. And here, with exceptions, you know, but like here, there's lots more. Like in Switzerland, we've got a real woman problem at the moment, which is a bit of a shame.
There's no real women.
There are some, but there's just not many. Like in Zurich, as a scene, there's currently more men named Chris than there are women.
That's insane.
Yeah. Which is very sad.
That is sad.
And it's also that thing of like, you know, having more means more start. Like, because if you see yourself in the thing, if you're at a show and you see a lineup with three women, you're way more inclined to sign up than if you see it with just one, because you think, I don't want to be like
the only other woman.
Yeah, I get that. That's awesome in Barcelona. Also, I'm sure there is behind the scenes that I don't know about, but it also all seems pretty drama free.
Oh, there's drama.
I'm sure, but I don't. But there's at least a professional veneer around the drama that doesn't. In other scenes, again, without naming names or anything, but there's a fair amount of X doesn't gig with Y because of Z. And here, everyone just sort of seems like, you'll at least be cordial.
Yeah. No, we will. And I'll tell you, like, personally, one of the things that I was having a tough time with today was just I had an exchange with a friend that, like, it was all me. It was, like, my personal emotional sort of, like, insecurities coming out, who I see all the time here in the scene. And even when we see each other, no matter what we've texted each other or what we've said, like, we're always going to be working together and be professional and do shows together. And it doesn't, you know, our personal relationships, like, obviously are going to affect, like, who we're closest with and who we spend the most time with. But I don't think there's really any comedians here who are like, I won't gig with them, I won't work with them. And we try not to even, like, if Luis sells a show out and we don't sell a show out or vice versa, like, we're not going to get mad at Luis. Like, we know the audience is there, and it's just like, that's, you know, work that we have to do. And we're all helping each other create a bigger audience and a bigger scene. So we see it as more of a community.
This is another thing that I would say positively about the scene here is it really feels a lot of understanding of a big picture.
Yeah.
I think, again, without naming names, but in certain other scenes at Berlin, there's an element of, like, people fighting over who gets to do an open mic.
Yeah.
On which day or whatever. And it's just sort of like, this is a big city.
Yeah.
This is a big city. There's A, there's space for all, and B, like, you're not even talking about significant money. Do you know what I mean? You're talking about who gets donations of a couple of euros here and there. Like, if you're going to have beef about the money, make it, like, build it together and get to the point that you can have beef about hundreds and thousands, you know?
Right.
So there just seems like to, just very fundamentally by stuff like the clubhouse as well, like things like the workshops and the idea of building a place that's not just a performance area, but is also like a social thing and a community thing. Like, that's got huge value.
Yeah.
Got huge value. Something I wish we had in Switzerland.
Yeah.
Even though there's good things in the Swiss scene.
Yeah, tell me about the Swiss scene, because I was like, talk about us, but I want to know more about the Swiss scene, and I know that you've really helped build a lot of that scene.
I don't like to give myself flowers.
I'm giving you flowers.
But you don't also
I actually know nothing. I know literally nothing.
No, so I built it from nothing. No, that's not true at all. That's not true at all. But basically, there's two scenes broadly, but they're very connected because it's Basel and Zurich. Basel, which is where I'm based, which is about an hour away from Zurich, and Zurich, where there'd been a scene for a while, for a bit longer. Basel, like, Zurich probably since 2016, Basel since like 2019, 2020. I think there was a mic per month in 2020.
Wow.
And then
COVID.
Then COVID, then I moved to Switzerland and I got frustrated with having to go to Zurich all the time. And we started some shows with my friend Albert Lowe, who, if you ever get the chance to see, is for my money one of the funniest people in the world off stage.
Awesome. Off stage.
Yeah.
I hope he listens to this.
Yeah, he won't. He doesn't know what a podcast is. He's like 41, but acts like he's 70. But they're like, it's really, really developed, and what I think is really cool, I would say quality-wise, I think Switzerland can hold its own with anywhere in Europe, and I would stand behind that. I think our best comedians can hold their own with, maybe not everyone, like, you got Michelle Wolf here, of course, right, that's a cheat code.
Yeah, but she doesn't, like, she didn't come up in our scene.
No, like, but, like,
we'll claim her, but we know we didn't create her, you know?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, yeah. But yeah, no, but I would say that it's really good quality. And also a lot of the Swiss comedians that are trained on Swiss audiences will go abroad and be like, oh my God, people that are loud with emotions and they'll fucking murder. Like,
that's awesome.
Like, shout out Chris Darwall, Vanessa Lepine, Albert Lowe, like all murder when they travel because awesome. They are just not used to the idea of the amount of like loud reception that you can potentially get when you don't live in a culture that doesn't talk.
That's, yeah, that makes sense to me. That's crazy. And I also appreciate that you say that about the scene, that people can, like, that your comedians hold their own. Because I think any European scene, whenever we go to the UK or the US or something.
We all have imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Right? We all, like, I recently had a show and I had a guy on who does Swiss German stuff mostly, but was doing a guest spot in English for one of my shows because he's a mate of mine. I do occasional Swiss stuff.
Love it.
His name's Moritz Schädler. He's also very funny, but he was just like, do you guys realize that this is just like cosplay? And to me, it's like the most savage, simple, complete takedown of all of the European English-speaking scene. It's just like, you're just cosplaying. Like, why are we doing this in English? Like, why are we all pretending?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I think I would end up in bed for like a week.
It genuinely shook me for like 2 days.
I'd be like, am I just playing The Sims? Like,
yeah. But like, the most gratifying thing is when you kind of do gigs with people that are... Like, I think that sometimes we can idolize the UK a bit too much, where it's also like, I do think the quality is better, but also the scene's fucking horrendous.
Oh, yeah, it's awful.
Like, the way, the culture of it and the amount of exploitation in like, London. I mean, that's where I started, right?
Have you done the Blackout or, like, Gong mics?
Yeah, I've done Blackout, I've done King Gong, and those are their own thing, but like just on an everyday open mic level, or like I know people who are on TV in the UK and still have a full-time job. That's crazy. Like they are objective. They have done warm up for James Acaster a few times.
That's insane.
And they can't live off of it.
Yeah,
that's fucking bonkers.
It's fucked.
Like that's one of like. Whereas me, I fucking do my shows in Switzerland and I'm full time.
Yeah,
know?
I was going to say, are you full time comedy?
Yeah, but like, yes, but through production.
Right.
Like, it's not that I'm getting booked every week. I just make and sell my own shows.
Which is still amazing, though.
Yeah, but like, I'm hesitant to be like, anyone can be a full time just stand up comedian if you're just good enough at the art. Like, you know, you have to fucking be a show producer.
Yeah, you have to be a business.
Like, if you want to make money, you have to be a show producer, and that means being a marketer, being a graphic designer, being all the bullshit that comes with that.
Yeah, and that's not easy.
It's just annoying.
It's a lot of work.
It's really unsatisfying work, you know.
It is.
But with the end goal of having good shows, it makes it okay, I think.
Nice. Cool. Well, I think we're coming up on an hour, so I'm just going to ask you the last question I ask everyone.
Okay.
Which is...
7 inches.
Maybe we'll just leave it there.
No. I want to hear what the last question is.
It's not really a good question. It's just kind of been the last thing this long. What advice would you have for anyone who wants to be a comedian or a new comedian?
I'm going to repeat advice that I've received as opposed to give something that's necessarily original.
That's okay.
If you see everyone zag. Simple.
Very simple.
Mm.
I'm into that.
Yeah.
Zigzag.
Like trust your own gut of doing something that's different.
I love that. I think I needed that advice today. So I appreciate that, Teddy. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm sorry I was so pretentious, but it's just my nature.
You're not pretentious. I am attracted to pretentious.
Forsooth, I'm not.
Hath she said. do you have anything to...
Hath she said?
I don't know. I was looking up Shakespeare quotes today, actually. Anyway, I'm pretentious. And... apologize for my weird mood, but you lifted my spirits and I appreciate that. Anything to promote? So we have the Spotlight Show, which will be Saturday, March 9th at 8 p.m. which you're headlining. Yes, indeed. Anything else to promote while you're here or on the road? Or
Saturday, yeah. If you can't make that one, I'm also producing my own show at 10 p.m., but that's probably going to be sold out soon.
Oh, cool.
So I would get tickets now if there's time. Other than that, follow me on, I guess, Instagram. I'm going to start doing some great content.
At Teddy Hall Comedy.
At Teddy Hall Comedy. And yeah, I hope to come back to Barcelona, hopefully, in the next few months. It's been much too long since I've been here. I've realized this.
Yeah, it's been like a year.
Yeah, far too long. I was going to Berlin too often. I was like, why am I going to Berlin? Barcelona's so much nicer.
So much nicer. It's just less depressing. Cool. Well, thank you again. And do I have anything to add? No, I don't think so. All right. Well, we'll see you. See you soon.
See you soon. Ciao, 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 ciao.
Ciao, ciao, ciao.
Let's pretend we're saying goodbye and then hang out.
Yeah.